Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. Relevant and engaging content designed to help you dominate the day.
Hello, friends. This is Patrick Georgioff at Behind the Knife, and we want you, yes, you, to join our team. We are now accepting applications for our subspecialty teams. Do you have something to say? Some surgical education that you just need to get off your chest? Then what better way to share your knowledge and passion for surgery than by joining the number one surgery education podcast in the world? Behind the Knife has over 20 million listens to date and an amazing new platform. Plus, it looks great on the old CV. We are asking enthusiastic educators to build a team of 3 to 4 surgeons who will develop one new subspecialty podcast every 4 months for 2 years, so 6 episodes total. Ideally, teams will consist of surgeons from the same institution who are at different points in their career. For example, a resident, fellow, junior attending, and senior attending. Podcast content will alternate between clinical challenges in surgery and journal reviews. Check out the application link in the podcast notes for more information, including a list of specialties. Applications are due March 1st. Again, applications are due March 1st. All specialty teams will get access to BTK resources, including microphones, software, help with editing, social media love, and so much more. Dominate the day.
If you have little ones at home, check out our Behind the Knife activity and coloring book made just for kids. You can download for free by going to our homepage at behindtheknife.org and scrolling to the bottom. The activity book teaches your kids about major organs, includes mazes, connect the dots, and there's even jokes. Check it out.
All right, welcome back to Behind the Knife. This is Patrick Georgioff from Duke University, and we have got the band together. I could not be happier to be joined by almost all of the BTK crew. And today we're going to draw from our collective experience to discuss how we being the imperfect souls that we are, maintain relationships as surgical residents and attendings. As we all know, that being a surgeon is really hard. It is super hard. There's no way around that. And if we aren't careful, the hours and the stress and the constant striving can really negatively impact one of the most important facets of our lives, and that's our relationships, the relationships with friends and family and significant others, and of course, our kids. And so we don't want that, and you don't want that. But over time, we all pick up tips and tricks and clever life hacks that help us develop and maintain and grow relationships even during the busiest of times. So without further ado, we're going to jump in here. And today we have a number of our BTK surgical education fellows here. And this fellowship, in my very humble opinion, is the absolute best surgical education experience you can get as a trainee. So don't be shy about applying and joining us. So we've got Elizabeth Maginot from University of Nebraska, Emma Burke representing Baylor, John Williams hailing from Michigan, go blue, Michelle Labella holding it down for UNC, and Emory's very own Nicole Petka. And the old folks are joining as well. That's Scott Steele and Kevin Canary. Scott's running the show, Cleveland Clinic, and Kevin at Brooke Army Medical Center. So, team, are you ready to discuss relationships and how we maintain them? Emma, we're going to start with you. And the topic I think we're going to, so we're going to break it down to significant others, children, parents, and friends. So we're going to start with significant others. So Emma, what kind of tips and tricks do you have for us?
You know, I think it's really easy to get sucked into so much of your time at work. And as soon as you're home, you just want to crash on the couch, veg out, watch some trash TV. My biggest thing is my husband and I try to plan a lot of intentional time together. That looks like running. Some days we love to run here in Houston, but on nights, honestly, it's tough. You're not seeing somebody for 4 or 5 weeks at a time. And so the best thing we ever did was start planning intentional time. So a lot of times during nights, for example, it's having that breakfast date scheduled for Sunday morning as soon as you're off of work. Gives you both something to look forward to and kind of forces you to get back in that groove of spending time with each other and not just next to each other watching TV.
Now, Emma, do you guys schedule this in advance and have it on each other's calendars?
We're not that advanced yet. We used to just mentally plan that.
Love it. All right, Michelle.
Hello. Yeah, I think one piece of advice I have is to try to leave the work at work, which is definitely easier said than done, especially with the home call a lot of us take. You know, we have unusually stressful jobs. Many of us deal with life and death on a daily basis. And it can be easy to take frustrations out on your partner or be mentally still at work when you're with them. I mean, how many of us check Haiku at home when we probably don't need to be? I think having an outlet to deal with the pressure and stress of this career is important. You know, whatever that is for you, running, weightlifting, cooking, stress baking, you know, or even staying a few extra minutes to vent to your co-residents. I think related to this, because our jobs are so often linked to our patients' lives, our partner stresses can seem insignificant at times. For example, my husband's also a resident and he spends hours prepping notes for clinic, something that thankfully I don't do as a surgery resident. And it doesn't always make sense to me. But those stresses in your person's life, I think, are important to them. And, you know, whatever they are, they're real and valid. And I think it's a point of connection in the relationship to acknowledge them.
Michelle, I have to say, I see that he's a radiation oncology resident. I have to say, some of the most detailed, beautiful notes I've ever seen have been radiation oncology notes with like trials in them and everything. So I get it. Now I didn't know how they did that. I didn't know they did it at night at home. Now I get it.
Yep. Hours at night, every night. I'm like, come on, can we like go to bed now?
I like the hyperlinks to the PubMed ID. So Michelle, if we flipped it and had your husband on, what would he say then, you know, being from his position and with you as a general surgeon, what do you think he would say? I don't know if you guys talked about it at all in advance of this.
I think he would probably say communication. I think like the more we talk about stuff and plan stuff of like when he knows I'm going to be around, when I, you know, I'm going to be in a long case, I think that helps him probably a lot.
Yeah, which is a good story. That's actually, I chose myself for this one too. And you know, everyone's relationships are built differently, and there's so many facets to how we interact with our significant others that kind of keep things going. And there's a whole bunch you have to do. And so I chose one thing, and it's Michelle, exactly what you said, which is communicate. To do it very frequently, you know, you said, is a case going late? Do you know in advance how your week looks, if it's going to be a bad week, if you know if you're going to have a late night? And to that end, I think one concrete thing you can do, and certainly as you become an attending, where your calendars become a real deal with, you know, perhaps even having assistants and opening up to other partners and other parts of your administrative team, that your calendar gets filled with stuff and becomes really like a living, breathing, like working document, that it's really useful to share that. And so when I get that calendar and I get my schedule, I share it as far as in advance as I possibly can, so that it's easier to plan dinners and practices, you know, and getting the kids to and from. And so that'd be my one very concrete piece of advice, is share your calendar and communicate about your schedule in advance. Kevin, you got anything to add?
You just reminded me, I remember as like a resident fellow, the calendar didn't really make much difference because I was basically working every day we'd have like my weekends off on there because every day was long and busy. But as an attending, things kind of change. You do have clinic days, you have easier days and lighter days, nights and weekends, you know, so that's just one thing my wife and I like sort of are very detailed about is our calendar. And we actually sit down on Sundays and we're like, okay, like Tuesday looks like a little lighter day. I just have like a couple morning cases and I can pick up the kids from school that day, or, you know, things like that. And then we also just like to schedule things to look forward to, whether it's just a date night. We try to do that at least every couple weeks, hire a babysitter, go out to a nice dinner or beach trips and things like that. So really kind of setting the expectations, everyone else has said, and how the week's going to look. And then also getting some fun things on the calendar and spend some of the money that you're working hard to make.
All right. Our next category are the little ones, the chillins. So Emma, what do you have to say about the kiddos and how you maintain relationships with the kids?
So I had my baby during my second year, which for us is a really busy year. I will say, first and foremost to all the trainees, if having a family is important to you, just do it. Don't let being a trainee stop you. There's a lot of days where I don't feel like I am a good mom and a good surgeon. There's some days where I'm a really rock star resident and some days I'm a really rock star mom, and that's okay. I think the best piece of advice I got from faculty was that my husband works, but he's in finance, and this faculty member told me, you know, having two working parents makes you really cool as a kid. Your kids are going to be independent. They're going to know what they want out of their life. And I really took that to heart. But that being said, find your village. I don't have any family in Houston. So for me, it's my co-residents. It's the nanny that I hired on the internet. It's daycares and such. So find those people for you. If you're lucky enough to be near family, that's great. But if you're not, you just have to find them yourself.
Emma, what was the biggest challenge to having a child during residency, especially in a busy clinical year?
I think the biggest thing was actually when I was pregnant, it was putting myself first. You know, as a resident, you give so much of yourself to your patients, your program, you know, your co-residents. And I think realizing that every decision I made was not just for myself, it was also for my baby, was a really big mind shift from staying late to pick up that extra case or, you know, double scrub with a chief that I like. That's a big mindset change. That's probably the hardest thing about it.
And were there any particularly positive things that happened that might, I mean, you have a wonderful child, so that's the biggest positive thing, but things that might have surprised you in terms of how you specifically, you know, fit all this in to residency?
Yeah, we bring our baby everywhere, and I think that's made it awesome. You know, we had like residency socialists. I bring my baby, my co-residents love her. And so it's not being afraid to like bring your baby and incorporate your family time in your social events with other people, which takes an understanding group of friends or co-residents, but that makes it so you can kind of maximize those few hours you get outside of the hospital.
All right, Scott. So I think, Scott, you're like the elder statesman, you know, as president of clinical operations at Cleveland Clinic and a busy colorectal surgeon and all your work with different organizations. You are extraordinarily busy. And your daughter is how old, remind us?
Yeah, she's 19. So, you know, I would just preface this question by saying that no matter if you go back to school or take on another commitment or have a child, there's no good time for anything, right? And so in my past life when I was in the military, I think that like a lot of us, it was a little bit of a different time. So my daughter was about 7 months old when I deployed the first time. And so then I deployed in 6, 8, 10, 11, and 13. So, you know, you look up and all of a sudden you realize that I had missed half of her life. And so we had very basic rules is that, you know, looking back, I think, what do you remember when you're a kid? What I remember when I was a kid is I remember vacations, holidays. So we had very simple rules. My daughter at 19 could tell you what they are. And that's during vacations, there is no whining, no crying, no talking back. And if you don't do those three things, you can do anything. I don't care if you want to have ice cream in the morning, if you want to do whatever you want to do, I don't care. And we used to have store days where she could go into any store and pick out anything she wants to when we're on vacation. Obviously, that's gotten a lot more expensive as time has gone on, but we still maintain those same rules. We just went to Europe just this past thing, and it's just, it's been something. And we were lucky enough to have kids. When you think about a lot of people and a lot of docs that you may know and trainees that struggle to have kids, I just think it's an absolute blessing and to prioritize those kids. And medicine is hard and we all have difficult sides, but the kids don't need to see that. I mean, it's not being fake, but you know, remember that what's at work can stay at work and just prioritize your kids.
Scott, I got a question for you. One thing I think I remember you telling us as residents was that when you'd get home, you'd put your briefcase down or whatever and not open it back up till your daughter was in bed. Is that one of your maxims?
Yeah, I would say, you know, Kevin, I appreciate that. And I did tell you guys that. I'll just share that, you know, I was so hell-bent. I had a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, maybe the fact I grew up in northern Wisconsin and, you know, having a little bit of, you know, I'm very proud to serve in the U.S. military, but I always wanted to be at a place like I'm at right now. And in order to get there, I always thought I needed to publish a paper or do something or get some position. And, you know, before you take a look around, you realize that I just remember one day sitting at home and my wife looking at me and my daughter being there. And she's like, you know, you're here, but you're never here. And you're always on your phone. You're always on your computer. And, you know, all of a sudden you look up and you can say, my God, is it all worth it? And, you know, you can do all that. And I remember just closing my computer and just saying, there's one thing that I don't do super well, and that is to sleep super well. And so I can take advantage of that because when I come home, I put everything down. I try to do my best to, you know, hang out, and people would be surprised, but I probably watch more TV shows than anybody in the world because my wife likes to sit down and do that. And then, you know, when it's time for them to go to bed, I'll just kind of knock out my emails and my work and we'll go from there.
Yeah, Scott, you also have a freakish ability to sleep very little. And so not everyone has that ability. So you use it to its maximum effect, though. And I agree, Scott, you mentioned the kind of leave it at home or don't let the, you know, kids necessarily see the difficult side of things. And so I thought about this one a lot and I got three separate ideas. And so first, you know, everyone's different, but with that limited time that you have, especially if you have younger kids and they're going to bed at like 8 o'clock or whatever, by the time you get home, you might have a very short window of time. And so even if I'm absolutely exhausted and stressed out, I try to make the biggest impact I can with my kids in the shortest period of time. And so for that, that means is bringing the heat and like the positive energy and the vibes. And, you know, everyone has their own, what, relationship type love language, whatever it may be. And everyone interacts with their kids differently. And so for me, that's a lot of physical stuff. So we wrestle, we play sports, we snuggle and read books and all that kind of stuff. And I think that that physical aspect of it in those shorter periods of time makes me feel a whole lot closer with them. And the, you know, second thing is, and when it comes to the kids, is most definitely having a supportive spouse. So I'm extremely lucky that Behind the Knife's wife and director of operations, Lisa, is my wife. She's an absolute saint. And one of the things that she did early on was that she would talk to the kids about what we're doing. So if I wasn't home, she'd tell them what was going on. You know, so like dad's at work and doing surgery and helping people. And allowing them to be a part of it, but also explaining it to them. And so they, you know, it wasn't just that I was gone. It was that something, you know, that I was doing something that might be important that they can look up to. And that's the last thing is that, you know, being a surgeon is a big deal. I think it's an exemplary career. It's a worthwhile pursuit to spend your life taking care of others. And your kids see that too. And so you don't, I mean, that in and of itself, if you are working your hardest to be a good surgeon and, you know, a good partner and a good, whatever, researcher, everything that you're doing, that is a massive positive influence on your children. And, you know, we shouldn't take that for granted. That's important that they see that. And, you know, you may be guilty sometimes, I'm not home, I'm not doing this or that. We should also be proud at the same time that you're setting an example for your children to go and, you know, do something big. And, you know, someone had mentioned that last part to me before, and I had never really thought of it that way. I just kind of felt more guilt as opposed to more pride in the sense that they get to see someone doing this. And it kind of changed things a bit for me. So.
Yeah, no, Patrick, you definitely stole a little bit of mine. But the one that kind of point I remember, and some of the people on the call know this guy, Tommy Brown. He was my program director, and I sat down with him when I was a medical student interviewing. And that's what I told him. I'm like, you know, I'm a little concerned about how to be a dad and be a good dad and be a surgeon. And he's got a bunch of kids. I don't even know how many kids he has. But he's like, his point to me was that it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality. And he goes, and basically that, you know, maximize the time you do have with your kids. And I think it's really easy for people in kind of like more of a regular job to really take for granted the time they have off, the weekends they have off. When I have time off with me and my kids, I really, and I'm not perfect at this, I don't do it all the time, but I really try to make the most of it, to be present, to go do something fun, whether it's the park or, you know, whatever it might be. And to rather than like lay around and watch football all day or, you know, things like, you know, you could get caught in doing easily, you know? And so I think that's one thing is like, you know, just really, you know, you may not have quite as much time at home sometimes, but really maximize it. And then the one kind of the other thing Patrick kind of hit on this already is I actually tell them if I get called in the middle of, you know, doing something, I tell them what I'm going to go do. Like, hey, this guy got in a car accident. He's going to lose his leg if I don't go help. And they're proud of that. And so, you know, that's just kind of a tactic we use. And then the kids ask a bunch of questions and go from there. But yeah.
Yeah, I think this idea too of maximizing that time, you forget that a lot of your friends or, you know, your neighbors or whatever, they have most, like, when I tell them, it's like, oh, I had this weekend off, it's so great. They look at you, you know, strange. They have every weekend off and they have more, you know, usually every night off. And so if you think about the total time spent, you know, really valuable time spent with kids, well, maybe they're spending more time with the kids over a longer period of time, but then what's the value? And so if, like Kevin said, if you're really focusing on maximizing that time, maybe you are adding up to some, you know, whatever, you're adding up to something that's meaningful that, again, may not be measured just in time, but with that impact.
I even felt that as a resident before I had kids. I was like, man, when I have a week, you know, quote unquote, golden weekend, like maybe maximizing it is sleeping or whatever it is, but like, man, I really appreciated that sleep. I really appreciated thing. And whereas a lot of my friends that had those weekends off, like it was just, you know, whatever to them. But, and so, you know, silver lining, I guess, of working weekends, but you can really find some joy in that.
All right, that wraps it up for the kids section. All right, let's talk parents. Nicole, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I think dealing with parents in residency can be hard because you feel like you're an adult, you finally have a job, you want to do this alone, but it's really hard to go through residency alone and you need your parents or your whoever your support system is for help. I remember early on, I would always call my mom on my drive home and vent about work and she would say, I really wish I could help you, I just don't know how. So I think that taught me early on to be open about my needs. One of the things we started doing is when I have a call weekend is I would ask for a home-cooked meal, just something that I could eat that's not hospital food. And now it's almost like a guarantee. If I'm on call or tell her that I'm on call for a weekend, she's like, oh, should I cook something? And it's just something nice that helps her feel like she's connected to me, helps her feel like she's helping me, even though she can't physically help with a lot of the things that stress me out in the hospital or in the clinical environment. So I think be open with your needs. A lot of things too, like life stuff. If your parents are coming to visit and they can help take your car to the mechanic or whatever it is during those daytime hours that we're not normally available, if you ask, they're normally willing to do it. And I think it can really help take some stress off your plate.
Yeah, that's great. Ask, right? Ask and bring them into the fold and let them help. That's huge. John?
Yeah. I think, you know, parents are such an important part of everyone's life. And especially when you're in such a stressful, arduous process, such as, you know, surgical training, whether it's the resident level or the fellow level. And I like reflect kind of like fondly slash comically back on this quote that I was told by one of my attendings when I was a PGY3. And like full disclosure, I probably was doing a, you know, mediocre at best job in whatever case you were doing. And he told me, well, I guess at least your parents are proud of you, which I think like at the time, you know, probably stung a little bit, but then I kind of realized that he was right. And I think it's really just, it's worth recognizing that there's some truth in that even on your roughest days or nights or long weekends as a trainee in the hospital for many hours at a time, it can be helpful to reflect on the fact that your parents and other, you know, extended family members really, really think highly of what you're doing and are very, very proud of you, even if it doesn't feel good to you at that time. And, you know, I'm the only doctor in my family, and certainly like there's some loss in translation in terms of what the day-to-day and the week-to-week is in the job. But, you know, I think sometimes it's worth reflecting and kind of resting on knowing there's a village, you know, wherever you're from, wherever you grew up, that cares a whole lot about you. And I think that that's important to reflect upon. And, you know, talk to your parents regularly if you can, and whatever that means to you. Some, I know friends of mine that talk to them every day, talk to them every week, you know, try to set some amount of regularity in that process just because, you know, it kind of grounds you as a human being outside of being a surgery training.
John, do you call them on the way home from work sometimes? And do you tell them about the cases and stuff that you're doing at work, or how do you bring them into the fold?
Yeah, I don't really talk too much specifics unless they're really interested, which like frankly a lot of times they're just kind of like, oh, sounds hard, like, you know, they don't really know too much. But I call them every single Sunday morning no matter what. So, you know, if I'm at work, I'll find 20 minutes to call them. If I'm at home, I'll definitely call them and kind of keep tabs on what's going on at home, and they keep tabs on what's going on here. And that's kind of my routine that's worked out over the years.
Does anyone else have a routine that they use to call their parents or FaceTime their parents, especially folks in training?
Yeah, mine's on my driving home, especially that Atlanta traffic. It's a perfect length for a phone call, catch up, and then by the time I get home, I'm ready to go on with my night.
Yeah, I totally agree. Same on the I-40 traffic that is now building in Raleigh-Durham.
Every day, yeah. A couple times a week, once a week, once a month.
I do it probably like twice a week.
I'm calling someone on a drive.
Yeah, if I don't FaceTime at least once a week, they're going to send an SOS.
All right, Scott, how did you, you know, over time with your folks, how did you keep them in the fold, and as your career has advanced and as you moved around?
Yes, as time goes on, your stages of life change. You know, I've obviously not quite in the same stage as many of you all. And I think as you get older, your priorities goes. We were pretty traditional. We got married, we got a dog, then we had a child. And then, you know, your parents seem to kind of always take that back seat as time goes on. And, you know, I guess I always, regardless of a relationship with my wife or my daughter or my mother passed away. Well, I do have my wife's mother that lives with us. She's 97. And it was a wonderful time that, I mean, she's completely functional, but to have that time that my daughter and her spent together and lived together for all those years was, you know, something that cannot be replaced. But I would just say that to a lot of these things that we're dealing with tonight, my best advice I can give to anybody is that even though we don't feel it, even though we don't necessarily do it, medicine can wait. You know, we sometimes think that, oh, if we're not there, then something's going to happen. The reality is that if we have good partners, if we have good infrastructure in place and good communication, the patients are going to get taken care of in a quality way, and we can have that much needed break and continue to foster those relationships that ultimately will make us more durable, more hardy, and less apt to be able to break down and provide better care.
Yeah, Elizabeth, what do you think?
No, I completely agree. So the thing that I came up with was when it comes to parents, it's really important to identify kind of when they really need you and to advocate to be there. So as a trainee, sometimes that is going to my program director and being like, hey, I need to go home for like this like doctor's appointment that my parents have for some, you know, some reason. So it's important to keep in mind that life really does keep moving outside of residency. And while you can't always be present for everything, you are kind of their like, you know, they're in family doctor in some way. So being available to answer those questions about stuff that maybe they don't understand in the medical system can really come in clutch, especially as your parents continue to age. So.
Yeah. Have others found themselves in the role as the family doctor?
Yeah, that resonates really hard with me. Like, I definitely have totally become like the first call for anything and everything that happens from everyone. And so, you know, and sometimes like, you know, you get home, you're like, the last thing I want to do is talk about a thyroid nodule with like Aunt Kathy or something. But like, at the same time, that means so much to like everyone in your family. And also is, I don't know, I mean, I think it's a way, just a way of connecting with your parents or your family in a way that maybe you've never done before and is certainly really important.
Yeah, I feel like I've gotten everything from the text of like, do these stitches look normal, to like, I'm getting my gallbladder taken out. And I like those questions because I'm like, I can answer these ones. But the medicine questions, not as much.
Yeah, I totally agree. Every time I go home, my dad has a lipoma on his arm. And every time I go home, he's like, can you just take this out for me? And I have to be like, no, I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I'll get you a suture kit, get a little lidocaine. Get
a bunch of lidocaine.
Bring it up and then show them what you can do.
Yeah.
Like our own. All right. Last group of relationships would be friends. And, you know, this is particularly tough, again, based on the schedules that are often worked. And so, Nicole, what do you think when it comes to maintaining relationships with friends?
Yeah, I think friends are hard because especially friends who are outside of the medical field, sometimes they really don't understand what your schedule is like, and it can be really hard to keep up with them. I know when I started residency, I was the person who in med school remembered all the birthdays and all the important dates and had gifts and texts to all my friends. But then I started residency and every day is just busy and the days all blend together and you realize you miss some of those important dates, and it made me feel really bad. So I started kind of planning ahead, using online like gift order sets that it'll be delivered on their birthday so that even if I forget to text them, they're going to get something delivered to their house so I didn't really forget about them, or using reminders in my phone to remind me to send a text on important dates to different people. That's really helped me kind of stay connected to them and also, you know, make me feel better about not missing out on important things in their life.
That's a good tip. John Williams, what about you?
Yeah, I think I totally agree with that. And yeah, I think, we've talked about so many important relationships. We talked about significant others and children and parents and things like that. And I think sometimes maybe friends kind of take a backseat to those things, especially when you're so busy. So, you know, being proactive about, you know, events with friends and staying in contact with friends is so important. And I think more importantly, you kind of need to know yourself and kind of know like what your needs are as a friend of all these folks from various chapters of your lives. So like, for example, like I hold my friends in such high regard, like they mean so much to me, especially the ones that aren't also doctors, because they just kind of remind me that there's a whole world outside of what we do every single day. So, you know, you just kind of plan ahead. You know, if your college roommate's getting married when you're the kidney resident on transplant, talk to the fellow beforehand and see that you're off that weekend, so you make sure you can catch that Friday night flight. Is your college reunion happening in like a different area of the country, maybe on the West Coast or something? If that's important to you, then try to dedicate one of your vacation blocks as a resident well ahead of time, and maybe like leverage that time to not just do that one thing, but string together some other opportunities to see folks in that area, whether it's friends or family. I think that, you know, sometimes you're going to stretch yourself a little thin, and it's going to be like a cost benefit analysis in your head. Like, you know, if you're like post call and are you going to take that really terrible flight to Montana to ski for 36 hours? If that's important to you, because that's the only time you're going to see your friends for the next 3 years, then maybe do it, you know, and you'll be tired when you get back. But I think that maintaining those relationships that mean so much to you is well worth like a little bit of fatigue or a little bit of extra effort on that part.
That's always the bugaboo, right? Is traveling, is getting able to get away. Because again, outside of a training program, most folks can take a Friday off and leave Thursday night or Friday morning, but you're stuck on that in between where it's like you're a flight like a 7 or 8 p.m. and the case, you're staring at the clock like in the OR at like 4, wondering, is it gonna happen? Can I get out? And that's extraordinarily stressful. And you're right, John. If you do commit and you say, this is important to me, you know, these friends are important to me, or this event's important to me, and you go and that's your one weekend off, that you like, you know, worked as hard as you could to make the schedule work around that, and then you are exhausted and you pay for it. You pay for it beforehand, you pay for it after. But you're right. I mean, some of these relationships are so important that you need to do those things. It can just, again, take, it's unfortunate that it takes that much effort. It could take that much out of you to get it done. Elizabeth, what say you?
Yeah. So I kind of going off of that, I do think it's good to find those activities with friends that you want to keep in touch with that really recharge you. So, I mean, easier to do with local friends than I think the more like nationally spread out friends. But my residency has like a little run group after work. So that's like a good way to kind of do something that's rejuvenating and then also kind of like good for you. And it makes the running fun and makes the gossip good because we're not in the hospital. So that's kind of nice. And then, yeah, I feel like I agree, though, with what you were saying, John, about long distance friendships. It definitely takes a lot of effort. But I feel like it's that same thing. If you're fine, if that ski weekend is going to really rejuvenate you, you know, knock it out. I never feel like I regret those things on like Tuesday, like Monday, the first week back. I might be like, OK, that was a mistake. I feel horrid. But then like by Tuesday, I'm like, OK, you know what? Like I can do it all. Like you kind of get that like second win. So definitely find the things that
I have regretted missing many weekends. I've never regretted going away for a weekend, looking back, missing weddings and whatnot, because you're just like, gosh, yeah, I really can't do it. And you have a very easy out. You say, I'm sorry, I can't because I'm working and like I'm a surgery resident or whatever, staff, whatever it may be. I'm sorry, I can't go. You always have that easy out. And I've definitely regretted missing things in the past for that bit of comfort at the time. And, you know, that's unfortunate.
Absolutely second that.
Yeah, you'll never like remember that you were a little more tired than normal on Monday, but you'll always remember, you know, making that big event or, you know, having that reunion.
Whenever you play the video back to on your phone, like when you're in the thick of it again on like 2 months of nights straight, you're like, I didn't look that tired. That was worth it.
Or you see the video or pictures when you're not and you're like, damn, I missed out.
Let a senior resident tell me, you can either be tired and unhappy or tired and happy. So you might as well be tired either way and just choose what makes you happy.
All right. Any other parting bits of wisdom or take-home points in regards to maintaining relationships as a busy surgeon and trainee?
Yeah, I would just say a little bit that, you know, relationships aren't equal, right? You know, in any significant relationship, every person is going to contribute, you know, in a different way, experiences. It's not a 50-50 perfect split. And to, you know, give what you can give, don't expect every time in return. And sometimes you're going to be able to reach out. Sometimes they're going to, you know, be able to reach out, but it's just that ability to keep things going. And so, you know, for some people that means literally booking things into your calendar. And sometimes it's your spouse or your kids or your friends or your parents. You know, we've all kind of said the same thing in different ways, but at the end of the day, you know, to think that medicine is the, you know, it's not going away, but you have to be able to take that break to keep yourself sane. And ultimately, it's going to be the best thing for you.
And with that, we'll sign off. Thanks, everyone, for sharing your thoughts. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Dominate the day.
Be sure to check out our website at www.behindtheknife.org. Download our free app available for Apple iOS and Android. Simply search for Behind the Knife in the App Store or Google Play to download the app. In the app, you can listen to our episodes, watch high-yield videos, and even access our premium content, including our oral board reviews and trauma video atlas. You can also follow us on Twitter at Behind the Knife and on Instagram at Behind the Knife Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to leave us a review. Content produced by Behind the Knife is intended for health professionals and is for educational purposes only. We do not diagnose, treat, or offer patient-specific advice. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your support.
Until next time, dominate the day.